These are the winners of who we are. And we're going to start down here at A. A is the common stuff. A is what I know about myself and what you know about me. Now, that's different with different people. Rena knows a lot more about me than some of you, and Matt does. But, I mean, you know, you all look at me and go, yeah, that looks like belly that goes off past his chest. Yep, sure does. That looks like gray hair. You want to look. It's all these things that everybody knows about us. You know that I went to school, because I told you, you know. These are things. A is a nothing window. Who cares? It's just there. But it is what we are. Now, some people get too worried about A. Oh, I got to lose 10 pounds, so I look really, really good. Well, then we'll all know you lost 10 pounds, and you'll know it, and I know it, and that won't make a rip short of difference. Let's go to B. B is an interesting one. B is what I know about myself, but it's what you don't know. Those are things that, you know, mostly, they're all positive, but what I know about myself that you don't know are generally either negative things about me, things in my past that I don't want anybody to know, fears that I have that I'm not willing to share with anybody, embarrassments from the past, you know, those types of things. Now, here's that. Let me explain the interesting part of this, because it's pretty important. When you get in a relationship, when Rena and I were first married, B was a pretty good sized window. Ladies, here's the truth. I hate this shit. All. And all. Y'all know what all means. All is everybody. All guys lie. If you think that somehow you found the guy that ain't lying to you, you are out of your mind. When I went with Rena, I was willing. Let me give you an example. Some of this sometimes comes back to bite you, though. I wasn't saved. Rena and I, and we got talking, so I'm having to figure out how I can spin these religion stories to make her happy, because I know she's way more serious about it than I am. And I'm going, whoa, I don't want that to be a deal breaker. So I'm just, you bet, babe, and I'm all along. And she talked about that, you know, someday I'd like to go on a mission field. You know what I said? That sounds really neat. You know, maybe someday we'll have to do that. And then my brain, I'm going, that someday's going to be so far down the road. Well, I'm going to get. I didn't say that out loud. I thought it, but I sure didn't say it. Holy cow, that'd been a deal breaker. She'd have woke up out of her trance. See, I had her in this trance. She woke up out of that trance and says, wait a minute. He's a heathen. What am I doing here? Goodbye, Bill. And I wasn't wanting none of that. Why? You remember why, right? She was hotter than a pistol at 20 years old. That's why I didn't want to miss out on this. So I was willing to tell her whatever. And did you think I was going to tell her these things about me? Huh? Babe didn't drink. But understand, in my past, I got kicked out of high school for getting drunk at all-state courts. Yes, I can sing a little bit. But I could party better. And I got into all kinds of trouble for that. You think I was going to tell Babe when we were first dating? Oh, yeah, Babe. Most people would sound as a flat-out drunk. No, I don't think so. I don't think I'm going that way. So that's what happens in B. Now you get married, and somehow you think, oh, yeah, we'll just share everything. Don't you two even try it. I'm telling you, don't do it. Not to be honest, son, but here's why. This window for Rena and I has shrunk down and shrunk down and shrunk down. It started shrinking down. How long were we married when it started to shrink down? About three and a half years. And we went to that conference and I finally told her the truth about some things. It took that long before I started to, and even then I went, you know, it blows up in my face, then I guess it's over. You see, in order to start to share that, you've got to start to develop that trust. Because, let me give you another example. When we were in St. Joseph, Missouri, where Matthew grew up, before we moved to Tennessee, where we live now, we went to a church of about 700 people. And I used to give the example, out of that church of 700 people, 698 could get up front of the church and say whatever they wanted about me. And I'd just sit there and it wouldn't bother me. Might get a little mad, but it wouldn't be a big deal. But if Babe got up in front of the church and said everything that she knew about me, I would get up walk out of the church and never see any of those people again in my life.
You see, we've been married so long
that this little cute thing here knows so much about me that she could cut me through in an instant and I would be crushed. That's what love is. That's what trust is. And I could do the same back. And we choose not to. And we won't. Why? Because we're always thinking 15 years from now, what does God want us to do? And he wants us to do it together, so we can't go there. If you think back to that ego insecurity, you see it took a long time to build up that security that she knows I won't rip her security out from her. And I know she won't rip my ego out from me. It's all I really have in this life. See, there's no material thing that you can hang on to that's of any value at any time. I may have more material things than most of you do, and there's nothing there that has any value that would make it worthwhile for me to get up a week from now out of bed. But she is. And so why would I want to rip that out? So here's what happens. As you get to know each other and as you build up that trust, and it can't happen in a day, Jesus changes us instantly. But some of our habits got very hard. So, that takes time. Now, some people say, well, should I tell them everything? I would offer, the answer is no. When I die, I will have a little box there, a little box B about Bill, that no one in this world knows. Those are things about my past that I don't want her to know. I don't want my kids to know. I don't want anyone to know. Why? That's important. Because it will make no difference in the future. If it was something that would be important that could impact that future, even if it's embarrassing to me, that it would be important that it come out. But if it's something that will not change a relationship for the better, okay? The kids knew that when they were little, I used to tell them about my past some, not because it was a funny story, even though I tried to make it funny, but because it was gone, kids, don't do what I've done. And there's a lot of things that I did when I was in high school that I know they didn't do, and that's a good thing, okay? Not nobody's perfect, and I'm not saying that my kids are perfect, but I use examples from my past to say, this is what happened to me. Learn from my experience. Don't learn it the hard way. So, but there will always be something. So if it doesn't change your relationship in the future, there's no reason to bring it out. If you and God have dealt with it individually, there's things that they will have that will make her great. But guess what? I don't sit there and go, oh, babe, what is it that you've been waiting 35 years to tell me? It's not my business. It's not important to how we're going to live the rest of our life and how we're going to serve people. Okay? Does that make sense? So that's B. C. This one's a fascinating one. Sounds almost the same, but it's not. It's what I don't know about me, but you all do, or at least some of you do, and that's usually a negative character trait or habit. Give you an example. About 2 years ago, I didn't realize this. Rena, after about 33 years, shared this with me. We were having a discussion when we didn't completely agree, wasn't 100% agreement on it. And I came over to kind of explain my side, and I went, oh, babe, just, you know. And she goes, don't touch me. And I'm like, what? She goes, don't touch me. I'm like, why not? And I think she let it slip out. Maybe she deserved it. I'm not going to ask her, but I think she let it slip out because she says, where have you come to touch me like that? I know you're lying. I went, really? She goes, 33 years? Yes, I know that. I'm going, you never told me? I mean, I'm pretty manipulative, I thought. But she goes, yeah, the kids know it too. We have some of those things that we don't know about ourselves. Now, generally, that's not very good either. And now you got a challenge. Do you want to tell the person? For a long time, her answer was, I ain't telling them that. Might have been early on telling them that because you'll kill me. Lately, it might have been because I got them big time. I don't know. It doesn't matter. But there are things about our partner that will be negative that we'll know, and we have to decide when that trust level is that we can even share it. I'm sorry, on your honeymoon is not the time to go, "Geez, would you brush your teeth? That is disgusting." But there's just things. Finally, this one. This one's a pretty fascinating one. "What I don't know and what you don't know about me." And we all have those areas too, that window. And this is what that's all about. We don't know it until the situation happens, how we'll respond. I spent 8 years in the Army, just missed going to Vietnam. So I've never been shot at by the enemy. Came close, but never was. I like to tell people, yeah, I'd have went, and I'd have been brave. But how do I know? I wasn't shot at. You don't know until you're in a situation. My younger brother, who's a year younger than I am, their third daughter was killed in a tragic farm accident with Rich. Rich is my brother. And there was just Rich and April, and they were working out in the field, and she got crushed under the three-point hitch of a tractor. And you go, well, yeah, I think I know how to deal with that situation. No, we don't. Unless we've been in that situation, we truly don't know. I do know the numbers of that. If you lose a child under 18, 75-80% of those marriages split because the stress is so big. And most of the others suffer after that beyond what you can imagine. But the response to that generally depends upon our character. That's what's built into us, and we don't know. If put in a stressful situation, would we be a hero? Maybe, if that's your character. If it's built into you so deep that that priority scale is just there, and God says, "I need you to do this," and you go, okay. Some of you are from other cultures where you might be forced to make a decision. Are you going to practice your faith? Or are you going to go along with society in order to keep from getting killed or hurt or harmed? I've never been called to do that. I'd like to think that I'd raise my hand and say, "Hey, take me first." But I've not been in that situation. The older I get, the more appealing it looks. But when I'm your age, I'm not sure that it looks that appealing. I've wanted my whole life ahead of me. My age now, I'm going, hey, if I get to go home, I get to go home. Our character displays it. One of these simple things. Simple, simple, simple things. Go back to ego and security. So remember I said you can never hit a woman? Here's the simple thing to learn. I learned it the hard way. This is how I learned it. I was in a friend of mine's wedding when we were early married. It was in the first 3 years. I was in school in a town called Vermilion. It was about 90 miles from Sioux Falls, the biggest city in South Dakota, okay, in the state. And Barry and Gloria lived up there, and we went up there one Saturday, and we were visiting, and we were leaving about 4:30 to drive back to Vermilion, and I'm early married, and I'm going, boy, in my brain, I'm thinking, honest to goodness, this is another one of those pictures where I can see it clearly. I went, wow, I've been a pretty good guy today. I think tonight could be a real nice night in my home. If you understand what I'm trying to talk about, you will have to do this. Anyway, I'm thinking I've been good and I'm going to get lucky. We come out, we had an old Plymouth Valoria. It was purple. This thing was ugly. Oh, my. It was an ugly looking car. But I'm getting in on my side of the door, about to open my door, and Rena's standing across the car, looking over the top of the hood, about to get in her door. And this is what she did. She looked at me and she says, "Bill, why do you always say those mean things about me in public?" Remember, just before that, I thought I'd been good and was going to get lucky. And she goes, "Why do you always say that about me in public?" I, being a guy, got to defend my ego. What did I say? Of course you guys know what I said. I said, "What do you mean? What did I say?" And so she just looked at me, didn't get mad, and nailed off three things that I immediately remembered I said before I could say, "That's enough! That's enough!" They were all true. I didn't even know it. But they were all things that now, if I ever did that, I would just be abhorred by the fact that I said something like that about me. Here's the rule. Never, ever, ever, ever say anything negative about your spouse in public. You say, "Well, what's negative?" If she thinks it's negative, it's negative. Apologize right away and learn from it. If he thinks it's negative, it's negative. Learn from it. We've been in St. Joseph about 10 years.
And we've started to build this into our life. And I went to Belize. And I said to the assistant pastor that took me down there, and we got talking, I said, I'll guarantee you, you've never heard me say a single thing bad about Rena ever. He stopped and he thought and went, you know, that's true. Never. And I said, you've never, even if I'm not around, you've never heard Rena say anything. No, that's true. That has become such a habit in our life that we can't remember how long it's been since either one of us said something in public that would have embarrassed the other person. I can call myself fat. That's my own thing. Will she call me fat in public? Just because it's true, not a chance. Will she say, you're an old gray-haired coot? No. Nothing. She will say nothing to embarrass me in public, and vice versa. When I say that babe is St. Rena, I'm not kidding. To me, she's St. Rena. If you want to threaten ego and security, the fastest way is with the tongue. That's why God says it's such an unbridled instrument. You've got to get it under control. More marriages go down because of what you say like that than anything else. It builds up over time. You just can't say anything negative at all. If there would be anything that I would hope this church would do, would be that they would start to practice, and so about other people as well, just practice and start thinking about it. And, you know, early on, we had to call each other. It's not something that you just say, okay, I'm not going to say anything negative again, and I'm never going to do that. We build up habits that are very difficult to break. And so we'd have to go, babe, I really didn't like that. Or she'd say, Bill, that don't make me feel good. And if you can do it in a nice way and start to work with each other, you start to work on that until it becomes such habit. I guarantee you, if tomorrow, in whether it's in school or in work or in activities, you will hear somebody say something negative about their spouse in public. Or their loved one or whatever. I guarantee it, whether that person is there or not. Because they'll get together and they'll be visiting over coffee and they'll go, oh yeah. He went out again, and I don't know what he was doing last night. Just wasting time. That's negative. That counts. That's bad. Can't go there. Or, the old lady never fixes me lunch. I'm not as concerned about fixing the lunch as calling her an old lady. You'll be amazed when you start to pay attention, and it will stick out so bad. I had nurses in the ER. That one guy would say things about his wife, and I had a male nurse, and I kept correcting him. And one day, he just blurted something out. And I knew his wife; she was very nice. Were they perfect? No. He blurted something out, and all the nurses looked, and he looked at me and goes, "Oh no, sorry, Dr. Lund, I didn't mean it." Did you tell her that? He called his wife was a nurse too. He called her and said, "I just said this, and I'm really sorry." You know, you can't change the culture. You can change the people around you if you're around there a bunch. You just start to, and you don't have to be mean or nasty or whatever, but everybody just got to know, wait a minute, if Lundis is here, don't go there. He ain't going to be happy. And I kind of have that personality that if Lundis ain't happy, everybody working with me ain't happy. But if Lundis is happy, everybody is happy. They all like to keep me happy. Never, ever, ever say anything negative. Okay, let's jump right into sex here. This is going to be different than anything that you guys have ever heard. This is not your typical sex talk. And the reason that Rena and I put this into marriages is twofold. One, it's important. God said it is. Two, it is one of the things that causes breakups in marriage. But here's the biggest reason. You want to tell them why sex is so important?
It's the best barometer of your marriage. It's not like a thermometer. You know, it doesn't raise the heat or lower the heat. It senses what is going on. And if your sex life is good, if your life is good together, then your sex life is good. It acts as a measurement of what is going on, good in your life or bad in your life. Because if things are going good, sex life is good. If things are going bad, sex life is no good. First thing to go downhill is the sex life.
Everything shows up in the bedroom first in a marriage. It just does. And that is really true. We spend so much time because, you know, as I say, it's not the most important thing. But, and by sex life being good, has nothing to do with how often are we having sex? Or anything like that. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking that both, for instance, using Rita and I as an example here, I'll try to do that most of the time here with this. Using Rita and I as an example. If she's happy with her sex life, and I'm happy with my sex life, we're both happy with our sex life. I guarantee you everything else in our life is going well. But if things start to go bad, whether it's economically, whether it's emotionally between us, whether it's how we're talking to each other, whether it's all of those kinds of things, one of us, things change, and one of us is not going to be happy. Why is that? Well, that's easy. It goes back to ego and security, right? If my ego is way up there, guess what? I want to do everything I can to make sure that she's happy with her sex life, whatever that is, whatever makes her happy with that. Okay? And if her security is way up, guess what? Do you think she's going to make Bill unhappy in his sex life? I always remark that, I used to tell couples all the time, when we would do a lot of one-on-one couples before they were going to get married, and I would go, you know, in the first 2-3 years of marriage, yes, I was a rabbit and I had the hots bad. But I'll be real honest. Sex may not be as often now as 35 years ago. Just like everything else in our marriage is better. I hate to tell you. That's really kind of awesome. Our sex life is better than ever. And as our marriage gets better, it gets better yet. That's just the way it works. So what Rita and I decided to do is go, you know, let's cut through some of the garbage then about sex and help people start to understand some things. And we start with this because, I don't know, maybe that's taught now in schools. It wasn't taught to us. I had to learn it the hard way. But it's important for men to understand the female's menstrual cycle. I do this primarily for men to make sure that they understand it, but also women to give them a couple of insights. What's the primary purpose? Remember, God's law is not mine. What's the primary purpose of sex?
Procreation.
If it was my law, what would it be? Let's have a party. I mean, let's be real honest. I'm a high hormone guy. You guys may not understand that, but I'm a basic. We'll go into that. So once again, I didn't get to pick. He says, sex is it. Now he says, and guess what, Bill? Sex is for procreation, but I'm going to be nice and make it kind of fun, too. I'm going, good job, dude. You know, I like what he did with that. However, here's the deal. Gotta understand some of that. So let's understand the female's hormone cycle. This line is estrogen. As you go through, and day zero is the start of your period, okay, through the cycle until your period starts again. And I picked 28 because that's an average length of cycle. I understand all you ladies don't have 28-day cycles, but a couple of things that are important to know. As you go through towards ovulation, your estrogen level goes up. Why? Well, that's obvious. Estrogen is what prepares the uterus and prepares your body to release the egg, to get pregnant, so that you can have a baby. So you go through ovulation. If you don't get pregnant, the estrogen level drops way down, and vice versa, the progesterone level drops way down to get pregnant. You don't get pregnant, progesterone starts to build way up, until here your next period starts again, okay? Simple enough. That's just simple physiology. Couple of things. This period from 0 to 14 can be variable, but pretty much from 14 to 28, or however long your period is, it's 2 weeks for all you ladies. So this period is pretty constant. This is the variable period. When people have 33-day periods and things, the difference, the 17 days tends to be, or the 19 days tend to be there. These tend to be 14 days from ovulation out to, if you don't get pregnant, to menstruation starting. Pretty common. Let's talk about a couple of things. PMS, I don't know what you call it over here. In my country, they call it premenstrual syndrome. Some of you ladies understand this pretty well. And it's different for different ladies. Guys, you got to understand this. PMS is a real thing. Here is the sweetest lady in the whole world. There would be times right in here where she would want to kill people. Now, that's not being negative. Remember, I said it can't be negative. We can point this out. It's very real. She would all of a sudden get ugly, and I'm going, what happened to me?
I mean, I knew pretty much when I was causing problems and deserved it, but there were times when I was getting my head taken off and I knew I was innocent. Okay? Why is this so important? PMS exists. And I remember Reed and I were first married and I started to live with this and I'm going, well, babe, if you're just mentally overwhelmed, you can take care of that. A lot of guys think that. Guys, I'm here to tell you, that's not true. Hormones do what hormones do. Let me give you an example. Insulin. Everybody pretty much knows what insulin is, right? Insulin regulates our blood sugar and our bloodstream and things. If I eat, let's assume all your pancreases are working fine. If y'all eat an ice cream cone, your blood sugar is going to go up, right? That's going to send the signal to your whole system, and what's going to happen to your insulin level? It's going to go up. Because the body's going to go, wait a minute, we got all this blood sugar, we got to get rid of it. What gets rid of it? The hormone insulin. So insulin's going to do its thing, making it in simple terms, going to bring your blood sugar back down. Now, you eat an ice cream cone, and you go, just like remember the law of gravity, you go, no, I don't want my insulin level to go up. Yum, 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 yum. Eat a big old log, you go, no. Or in America, you have the giant-sized Dairy Queen Blizzard, you know. It's about 42 pounds of ice cream with chocolate in it. And you go, no way, I am not going to have my insulin go up. Do you think that's going to stay that? That your insulin level is going to stay even?
No.
No. It's just the way it is. Because hormones do what hormones do. And what I had to learn is that Rita could not just mentally say, okay, I'm not going to be mean and angry and want to cut Bill's head off today. It was a hormone that was causing problems. Well, sometimes ladies will get hungry. I mean, they can get a lot of things. Sometimes ladies will bloat, you know, they'll feel this real bloated food. Whatever it is, every woman learns what her symptoms are. And you know what? Every smart man, as soon as they're comfortable talking about that, learns what they are, too. I got so that I knew Rena's period cycle better than she did. She could say, Bill, what day am I on? Any day of the month, and I could go, you're about day 12, or you're on day 25.
I'm going to add a sidelight that it's hard for him to add in, but I can as a woman. The side effects of some of these hormones are obvious to men, but this is one of these men know about women, but women don't know about women type things. Estrogen gives our bodies a smell that is almost irresistible to men. It smells like flowers, and they just love the smell of estrogen. They don't know that's really what it is, but they go, oh, that makes sense. You know, you think it's perfume or something like that, but a lot of times it is estrogen. Progesterone has the exact opposite things. When we have getting close to our periods, we have rough, our urine smells, and everything, your armpit smells, you're like, what is that? You know, it's progesterone. And we don't even know that. It took me years to figure that out. But that is one of the side effects of those hormones, and that's why when I kind of learned it when Bill would kind of go, oh yeah, this is day such and such, you know, and he smells by the smell where we were in the cycle. So, That's
true. How many people have been around farms very often? I grew up on a farm milking cows and stuff. All you got to do is watch a cow in a herd. What does he do? He goes and he smells all the cows. And when it smells right, that cow is the one that gets bred that day. And when it doesn't smell right, he walks on to the next one. Hormones do what hormones do. Now, that's all fine and good, so you got that as a background. But understand something about this time. Those hormones are doing things that aren't good to them, and it's not their fault. Rena did not really want to take my head off, but the hormones made her feel like she wanted to do that. And so I had to deal with the consequences of that, but I had to come to learn that it wasn't her fault. Now, a couple of practical things from that. If you can possibly keep from making a major decision as a couple from a particular time in life, it's right there. Ladies, you're going to get mad at me, but just accept it because it's true. You don't think straight there. You just don't. It's not your fault. It's just the way God made it, but you don't. And men, if you're going to understand their security, do not take advantage here and have them, because they're not thinking straight, to have them make a decision that you know wouldn't fly. That's stupid. Also, understand that with that, don't take it personally if they want to take your head off. That's tough. I'm not saying it's easy, and I'm not saying the word sometimes, and I go, babe, come on now, let's be half fair about this. And she would understand it, but it would just aggravate her. So we had to learn that there were times just to stay separate. And we taught our kids that at a very young age. They didn't have to know everything, but this is what we taught our kids. Rita and I developed this code that if she came out in the morning for breakfast and said, I feel like killing something today.
Good code.
She had that feeling. And the kids knew that if their mother came out and said, I feel like killing something, you should have seen Demi. Whoa, whoa, whoa. They were out of there. Because they've been taught something. If your mama wants to kill something, it'll probably start with me. And if I get killed because of what you do, never forget the theory that stuff rolls downhill. There's Deuteronomy. Do you want to live or do you want to die? And so they went, for life, it's best just, they did, they scattered like rats. I need to tell you what. And we would just leave,
you know, after a while, it was only about a day or so.
It would generally wear off in a day or a little more, the worst part. And we would just leave her be. It's like, don't say nothing, don't talk to her, don't do anything, because those hormones are doing their thing. Now, I'll give you one other interesting thing just for fun. I had an x-ray tech. They didn't have much money, and they were going to go on their 10-year reunion to Hawaii. She goes, this will be the trip of a lifetime. We will never get to go to Hawaii again. We'll never have the money. And I went, that's really great. They were a nice couple. They went to our church. I thought, that's really awesome. I looked at her and said, so what's your hormone cycle look like? She goes, huh? I said, excuse me. You plan to go on a trip, once in a lifetime trip, just you and your husband, you're not taking your kids, just you and your husband to Hawaii. You know what's going to happen there. And you're going to go over there potentially when you're there in your period? She never thought about that. This is for practical stuff. Here's something else, though. You know, man, you're getting your head taken off there. Guess what? This time here, it's what I call my time of good living. And this is why. First of all, oh yeah, they are sweet. Secondly, what's God built into nature? That they would want to get pregnant. You know, you can hardly mess up bad enough to get chewed out in those 3, 4, 5 days? Why? In simple terms, because when that happens, she'll put up with just about anything to have him. Once he knows this, there's the temptation to use it to your advantage, guys, because I know the way we are. All guys lie, all guys are sleazy, too. Ego and security. You may get chewed out here. You'll enjoy yourself sexually here. But be very careful about taking advantage of her leeway in how you treat her and other things in life in there just because she's where she's going to put up with it. Trust me. You've been married long enough that you, if you're honest, you know there's times when you go, wow, why'd she put up with that? She did. And there's other times when you know, wow, why'd I get my head bent off there? Because you were, it's just, it evens out. But in both cases, guys have to be the head of the house and not take advantage of the female and not do what they shouldn't be doing. But it evens out. So that's the female hormone cycle. Never taught that in medical school, did they? Let's look at testosterone. Nobody in the world wants to admit that testosterone is a hormone that does what it does. You know what? Guys are guys because God made us that way. We're never going to be girls. I used to tell the kids all the time, and I used to tell other people, God didn't make me a mama. I don't have a mother's bone in my body. I understand how she is to the kids. That's being a mama. And that's how God made her. But he made me a man. They could mess up and I could look at them and I could go, that is really stinking funny. And I could beat the living tar out of them And then when they were all balling in a corner, I could go, that was really funny.
Mamas can't do that. They think it's funny, and they just got to laugh right there.
Because that's mamas. But guys, we're not mamas. And mamas, don't forget, we're not mamas. We're guys. We have testosterone. What does testosterone do? Well, we're going to talk about that, a lot of things. Testosterone, very early, the first 6 months is very high, and then it drops off. We don't really know all the reason about that, but it drops off until puberty, and then it starts to go up. From 16 to 25, it's way up. By the time you're 40, your average testosterone level is about half what it was when you were 20. And by the time you get to be my age, you go, what happened to that hormone? Where did it go? You send out a search party, you know. There's still some there, but it ain't like it used to be. Things change. That's just the way guys are. Why? Because testosterone does what testosterone does. And when you're 20, it's way up there, you do a bunch of stupid things. Okay. You've heard of anabolic steroids in the Olympics and things. Anybody here from East Germany? Good. I'll insult you anyway if you are. In 1980, the East German women's team was setting all kinds of swimming records. They were winning all the golds in the Olympics and everything else. Everybody goes, how does this happen? Because in 1979, they were all coming in dead last at all the swimming meets. Yet in 1980, they were all winning. And American swimmers, American female swimmers, were complaining that they would walk into the locker rooms, you know, the changing rooms and things, and it sounded like there were men in there, but they could never find them. And they wondered what was going on. And only until years later, when the Berlin Wall fell and then other things happened, and we found some of the records, and we found out that the East Germans had completely doped up all these girls on anabolic steroids. They literally turned girls into guys, because that's what testosterone does. It builds muscle mass, builds rage, builds all that. That's the anabolic part. The androgenic part is the sexual characteristics, the libido, sex drive, and sexual characteristics that distinguish us. But the anabolic aspect of all of the steroids, and testosterone is one of the strongest anabolic steroids out there, had turned all these women into men. The sad part is now when you look at those ladies now, 30 years later, they're either dead or dying. All from cancers and other things. All because of what they did to them. We know about the harmful effects when you take too much. But that's some of the effects of testosterone. And I postulate that when you reach a threshold level, as I tell Rena, you know, a hormone's going to do what a hormone's going to do. When you get enough insulin, it's going to do what it's going to do. You say, well, don't drop the blood sugar down to 20. But the fact is, if I take all your arms right now, shoot you up with 100 units of regular insulin, your blood sugar's going down. And if I give you another 100, it's really gone down. And there's a threshold where you're toast whether you like it or not. Okay? Well, I believe there's a threshold of hormones that when you reach that threshold, it's just there. And it does what it does. And it causes guys to act the way they do. And you know, when your threshold is up there, you're going to do something to get rid of it. We talked in the past a lot about abuse, spouse abuse, kid abuse, things like that. See, if my threshold is bumping way up here, I mean, it's just out of the roof. If my testosterone is out of the roof and babe says to me, you're not touching me with a 10-foot pole, I've got to do something. And unfortunately, that generally tends to take a lot of bad tracks, a lot of what I call tracks, a lot of bad ways. Y'all know about CDs, you know? And I don't know so much anymore that they built them in, but originally with the CD players, you could block a track. So let's say you had 10 songs on a CD and you put it in and you didn't want to listen to song 3 ever. You just block song 3 and the CD player would play 1, 2, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Okay, you'd have to listen to song 3. But if you take the block off, then it'll play 3 again, right? 3 doesn't disappear. It's there. And only do you not play it as if you have a block on it. That's practical in a lot of ways. From a medical way, let me give you this one. I always tell smokers that want to quit smoking. If you're going to quit, you have to quit. And you can never have one. Because everything we do from the time we're that little bitty baby till the time you're as old as I am, the oldest geezer in this room, everything we do, our brain sets up what I call brain tracks, like a CD track. It cuts a groove in our brain. It never forgets anything. And when you do something over and over and over and over again, it becomes very routine. If you ever want to read an interesting book that's kind of deep reading, read a book called Psycho-Cybernetics by Maxwell Maltz. He was a plastic surgeon who worked for Hitler during the war, and after the war, he came over to America and did plastic surgery. And he wanted to know why some people he could do a plastic surgery and make them beautiful, and their whole life would change. And other people who do the same surgery, they were just as pretty, but their life wouldn't change at all. And he started thinking about that. This was in the early 50s, and he started thinking about that and realized that we have these brain tracks that we play. And you see, in the first case, they put a block on the I'm ugly brain track. I've got this bad scar from a burn or for whatever. And they had started a new track that said, I'm beautiful. The other ones never did block that first one, so it didn't matter what they looked like. They looked at it and says, I'm still ugly. How's that important to this? We set up our brain tracks in everything we do. I first read that book when my oldest son was learning to feed himself. And see, the brain only remembers positive results. Positive has no moral judgment to it. It's not good or bad, like God said it's good, God said it's bad. Positive means I did exactly what the person told me to do. That's why people who play sports do things over and over and over and over. You practice free throws until you can't even bend your knees anymore. Why? Because you are trying to set up those muscle tracks to automatically do the same thing every time, so that once you get it down, you can be the best free throw shooter out there. We all do that. We set up tracks with everything that we do. With Jimmy, as I watched him, he would go to start to feed himself, and sometimes he'd exchange, sometimes he'd hit his nose. That's why everybody takes these pictures of the guy, terrible, a little dirty, messy kid, you know. But pretty soon he hit his face all the time, the picture's gone. Why? Because the brain goes, he's always hitting his face, that's what I want. Okay. That's important, because the tracks that you decide to set up are the ones that are going to play. If you want to quit smoking, you've got to put a track on that how to smoke thing, which means you can never have a cigarette, because once you take one cigarette, you've taken the block off of that whole track, and the brain remembers how to do it perfectly. You don't have to tell it the next time where to reach for a pack of cigarettes. You know where you keep them. Where to reach for your lighter. You know where you got that. When to have it, you know that every time after you have coffee in the morning, you have a cigarette. And pretty soon you're smoking just like you were before. You go, what happened to me? The brain did what you told it to do in the past. Why is that so important sexually? Unfortunately, because sex is such a big thing to guys, we tend to set up sexual tracks in our brain when we've gone through that puberty early. And we don't know how to handle it, or we may not know how to handle it correctly. And we go down and we set up tracks that may be based on pornography or sexual experiences with others, you know, that God says, I'm going to have bad consequences. Not here to judge anybody. We all sin. I'm just saying. We set up those tracks, and pretty soon the brain doesn't put a moral judgment on it. The brain says, well, for 100 times he said, that's what he wanted me to do. If you set up that track and you wonder, well, gee, why do I click on that site on the internet? If you've done it 100 times, the brain says, I'll just do it automatically for them, because that's why they sat down there, isn't it? Or if you somehow got some other skewed view of sex, and all of a sudden now you're married. Here I was with Rena. I'm not going to sit here and lie. It's nothing that nobody ever wants to talk about. But to say that as a young boy, long before I got married, I never saw or was involved in anything I shouldn't have been, would be a complete lie. Now here I am with Rena. Sweet Rena. You think I'm going to tell her what I'm thinking in my brain when we're having sex? I know this face don't look too smart, but I even knew that wasn't too bright. Why? Because my window B, you remember that window B? That window B is up there. There is no way I'm going to talk to Rena about that. And you wonder why I say I might have been a rabbit my first 3 years, but our sex life wasn't that good. I didn't trust her enough to start to share some of those thoughts and fears of mine. Now she pretty much knows about me. Guess what? What's our best sex now? But that, just like everything else, sometimes has to be approached slowly. It's not something you can just run into. I wish I could say I made this up, but I didn't. Okay? Women plant sex to get love. Men
plant love to get sex. Don't kid yourself. And why? Let's go back to ego and security. I want to be the best husband ever. That means I want to be the best she's ever known. Now, let's say Mabel, what if she's known 30 other guys? If all of that's out of her past, then from now on, I'm the best she's ever known. That's all that counts. And we don't have to go into those other 30. It doesn't matter. But if every time we're having sex, she's thinking, oh, man, how am I ever going to tell Bill that he ain't nothing like Barry? Now, Barry could rock my world. This boy, he's barely a ripple in the tub. I mean, you know, the point is that those experiences come up and are going to make a difference on both sides. Women, what are they looking for? They're looking for security. And if to have security, it means that yeah, I know I'm not married, but I'm going to have sex with him because he tells me he loves me, and my dad treats me like crap. Oh, well, I always lay a lot of this back on the dads. Dads, if you love your daughters the way you're supposed to love your daughters, they wouldn't have to go off and run off and jump into bed with somebody else at 14 years old, generally. But they're willing to play at sex to get love. Why? Even if they can't explain it, their heart wants that security to say, somebody loves me. Somebody loves me for who I am. And now you'll understand when I'm not being cynical when I look and say, birth rules are easy. Same thing, though, women. And this is what a lot of women do. Because men will play at love to get sex. I'm not saying I was a good guy, I wasn't. I was a bad guy. But if Rita said, I want to go on the mission field, sign me up! That might get me closer to it. I'll tell her anything she wants to hear. I'll play love all day long if I have the remotest chance of jumping into bed with her. We've been married 35 years. I love my wife dearly. She loves me. But I'm still physically not completely incapacitated, and neither is she. So if she said, Bill, you ain't ever getting it again in your whole life, that would be more than a little strain in our marriage. I'd be going, remember that sentence about we play at love to get sex? If you think I forgot it, you're out of your mind. Does that make me a bad guy? No. I'm a guy. Girls, it doesn't mean they don't love you. And as it goes on more and more and more, that's the whole part what makes marriage so much fun. That's why I say the longer it goes, the more fun it gets for us, because we understand that. It doesn't mean I don't love her. And I know that there are times when Rena plays at sex to get love, but it doesn't mean that I think less of her for that. And that's how we work together well. Doesn't make it bad. It's just the way we are. Let's look at this. This is the last part because this goes back to Scripture and I just love this. Cortisol is called the stress hormone. In other words, when your body is under stress, cortisol level goes up to help you deal with that stress. Now, what we know, because they've measured this, is that cortisol and testosterone are directly inversely proportional to each other. What this means is this. In a guy's body, if my cortisol level goes up, immediately my testosterone level goes down. Immediately. Because the body is gearing up to fight and everything. It don't need testosterone for that. It needs cortisol. And when my cortisol level goes down, immediately my testosterone level goes up. So you look at it and you say, well, what practical thing did God build that into people for? And how does that fit with Ephesians 5:22? If Rena, as we would say in America, gets in my face, starts chewing at me about something.
Nagging,
you know, about why'd you do something like that or whatever. What happens to this? Up it goes. When that goes up, what happens to this? Down it goes. Now we have a challenge. Ladies, I didn't make the rules. I'm telling you. I repeat this so often because you got to understand that. God made the rules. Because men
play at love, to get sex. If my testosterone level is way down to there, I mean, you know, you can't even see it with an electron microscope. It's so low. What is in my body telling me to be nice to her? Nothing. There's nothing in my body that says, Bill, you need to have sex today. It's no different than if you're really, 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 really sick, the last thing you want to worry about is having sex. When they gutted me from here to here for diverticulitis, and I'm laying there in the bed because I hurt so bad to even wiggle, and the reader was over there talking to me and being nice, do you think I care about sex then? No. Because my cortisol level was so high, there was no testosterone in me. I could have cared less. She could have been dancing naked on the little dinner tray table. I went, what are you doing that for? So that when your stress level goes up, whether it's because of illness, whether it's because of, let's say, finances, you lose a job. Finances get really, really bad. Whether it's because of anything that puts a guy under stress, this testosterone level goes down. But the one that I want you guys to focus on here is when you get angry with your husband, if you get in his face and badmouth him and all those kinds of things, this testosterone goes down. And if my testosterone is way down there, there's nothing in my system that wants me to come up and go, babe, I'm sorry. And what happens with so many couples is they start to get into that cycle, so they let it go one day, 2 days, 3 days, and they have all these days when they're just miserable. And you see, something has to happen. Either Rina decreases the stress level in my home, so my testosterone goes way up, or some outside thing comes into my life to drive my testosterone level up. Like I see 84 beautiful naked women, I'm going, wait a minute, what have I forgotten in my life? Oh yeah, that. And what we see changes our testosterone level. I'm going to tell you in just a second very quickly. Either I get my testosterone level way up, because you see, remember when I put that little thing, I said there's a threshold level? If my testosterone level is up at that threshold level, guess what? I don't care if she burns the bacon. I don't care if my socks aren't put together. I don't care nothing except one thing. Oh, babe, how are you tonight? Listen, when your testosterone level is way up, you're willing to do whatever for it. And when it's way down, you really don't care. And women say, well, I'm not going to change until he apologizes. That's your choice. But just know that he don't care about apologizing. He don't care about coming up and just holding you and saying, I know, you are so special. All those things that to you would make a big, big, huge difference, there's nothing in him that makes him want to do it. So you got to think about those things. So both of us had to do about that. And I would understand. If she makes me mad, I would understand that it goes down. But then I go, okay. And this is why I say love starts to play in, because now, even when my testosterone level is way down, I've learned some things, and now love does kick in. And love goes, yeah, I know, my testosterone level is way down, and I may not get anything out of it, but I'm going to go apologize anyway. That's tough in the first few years of a marriage. It really is. Because it's so unnatural. And if you can learn it early, it'll just make your life better early and better and better and better. It's what happens with those things. So if you want to get in their face, so to speak, and be stressful in your home, if you want to be the boss, if you want to all those things to your husband, just understand that he ain't going to care if you're walking, sleeping, dead or alive. He ain't going to care that you're there. Because you're killing his ego and he's got no testosterone. There ain't nothing left for a man. In our life, there ain't nothing left in that. They did a study. When you say about how fast that can happen, people go, well, that's not a real fast thing. They did a study. For a long time, they couldn't measure what we call active testosterone. They could, but it had to come out of a blood sample. Now let's be real honest. If you cover me with a needle, what's going to happen? My cortisol level goes up, it's going to make it fall. But when we got our technology stuff that we could measure active testosterone in saliva, then all we had to do was go spit in the cup, and they could measure it. And so what they did is, once they got that, they took a bunch of guys about 20 to 24 years old, at the height of their testosterone thing, they took them into a movie theater. And they started showing pictures up there of, you know, mountains and pretty scenery and mom and apple pie and just all these kind of things that are neither erotic nor stressful. They're just nothing. They're just pictures. And he said, spit in a cup, spit in a cup, spit in a cup. And they would measure people's active testosterone. Now, we're all different. Not only by age are we different, but another way to easily tell who has more average daily testosterone is by their voice. Testosterone thickens vocal cords. And you musicians that play a bass, you got big old strings on that bass. Testosterone thickens your vocal cords. So if you talk with a deeper voice, you have a thicker vocal cord. You have more testosterone on board routinely than a tenor who talks with a higher voice. Certainly than a soprano. Now, every woman has some testosterone in her, just like every man has some estrogen in them. But it's not enough to make a difference. So, they took these guys in and they measured all of their active testosterone levels. Then, without telling them anything, they started putting erotic images up on the screen and they said, spit in a cup, spit in a cup, spit in a cup. Now, what would we expect? We'd expect that it would take their testosterone levels up because that's just how guys respond. How long did it take from the time the image hit the screen until they could measure it in the testosterone? Now remember, that image has to go into the brain. It has to get transmitted primarily to the testes that make most of the testosterone. They have to ramp up production, dump it out into the distribution system, get it into the bloodstream. It has to circulate through the body, get up, and actually be taken out of the bloodstream, dumped into the saliva so that you can measure it. How long does that take? It took about 5 minutes to get it from baseline to way up there. 5 minutes. Which means, you know, when you say, well, can I raise his testosterone? Yep. Babe has learned to raise mine in no time. That's the way life is. Now, they then went back to the pictures of the mountains and the pictures of the pie and the mamas and all that good stuff. Said, spit in the cup, spit in the cup. Got all these people back to baseline. And then they went to the picture of the dentist drilling in a tooth with the sound effects, the smoke of flying. And I said, spit in the cup, spit in the cup, spit in the cup. 5 minutes later, their testosterone had dropped way out of sight. Took the drill off, let it go up, back to normal. The fact is that, and here's the thing that's so different, you have to understand. Here's a woman. Once every 28 days, she ovulates and can get pregnant. What if we had a 28-day cycle, man? And what if my cycle was off 14 days from Rena? The fact is that God made us. We have to understand we're still animals. We're in the animal kingdom. We're humans. We have unique things, and that's all wonderful, but we're animals. And we're herd breeders, which means that, guys, it just makes intuitive sense, right? We got to be ready now. When she says, Bill, I need you, Bill says, where, when, and how? That's easy to do when you're under 40. When you're up to about 60, you go, how much time do I have? How bad do you need me? Are you going to give me some time for this? You know, but it's not no. You don't say no. It's just for a few qualifiers in it, okay? And that's why it's so important. Ladies, just like men, you have to learn the female hormonal cycle so you don't mess it up and understand that that's the way it is. Women, understand that's the way we are. And you have the power to influence it, good or bad. And like everything else, I simply say, that's your choice. You want to get in their face and just ruin their testosterone level repeatedly? Hey, don't be surprised when he doesn't come home and he finds somebody else. Because just like Earth girls are easy,
men are easier.
Men are easier. We have to guard ourselves. I'll give you a true story on this. Not the whole reason, but part of the reason that we moved to Tennessee. And this is one of those things that Rena did need to learn, so we talked about it. I had a nurse that I worked with, the sweetest Christian lady you'll ever know. Never, ever did a single thing wrong with each other. Except one thing.
We both knew that we really, really, really had become heart-wise attached to each other. Had a friend of mine in Tennessee one time say, Bill, it sounds like she was number two and moving up fast. That wasn't far from the truth. She never supplanted Rena. Never. But that's how easy it is, because she was at work like Rena is at home. And I had gotten used to having someone who paid attention to me, someone who respected me, someone who asked my opinion. And I worked all the time on her and her marriage, and to a great thing. Her husband now goes to church with her and got up and did his confession in front of everybody. And I'm really thrilled for him. But she and I both knew that in a way we were falling in love with each other, and this wasn't a good thing. Even though, and so I wouldn't even let her touch me. I would let other nurses hug me, but I did not have the guts. And that's what I'm trying to explain to you women why this is so important. I did not have the courage to let her touch me. Because remember, window D? I'm kind of a slug. I'm not sure how good a character I would have had. So I did what Joseph did. Not quite the same, but kind of. Get out of there. And I haven't seen her for years now. Ladies, understand, I don't care how neat you think your husband is, I don't think how cool you think he is, and how perfectly pure he is. If he gets over-complacent that he can't be taken down, I'm guaranteeing you there's a lot of women out there who can take him down. And he'll never forget it. I was married over 30 years. No one could question how much I love Rena. I never take it for granted that I'll get 36 unless I keep working hard at building her security. Only a fool thinks that you finally got something down so much that Satan will never come after you. Always he'll come after you. And you have to be willing to be honest about it. I can imagine the hurt that she would feel over even that. Like, how could you do that when I'm so good at it? But we talk about it. She understands me. She knows me. She knows I'm a dog. But I'm a good dog. But I come back. But that we're willing to talk about it, and I have enough trust in her that I knew I could share a honest feeling, and she could be okay.
Because I knew that there were hundreds of women out there that would raise his ego and would raise his testosterone, I decided I needed to do my own study, needed to work hard at it. And every sense that a man has can raise or lower his testosterone. All the senses, you know, smell, touch, taste. You may laugh at this, but even I know Bill's favorite meals. And I know that if I make his favorite meal, his testosterone goes up. It's just, you know, and people go, well, I wouldn't go to that extent to make his favorite meal, you know. He can make his own meal. Fine. Have a great life. Because there are things that you can do that are within your power to do that. It's certainly been a much better life to do that and to create the honesty between us to talk about these things, because there were many nurses, many times, there were nurses that would come up behind him, rub his shoulder, say, I want to have your baby, put their breasts in his back and while he's sitting down. You know, all these things, you go, of course that raises the guy's testosterone. Do I want him to stay at work or do I want him to come home to me? And some women go, well, he just comes home horny every day. You know, what am I supposed to do with that? If he doesn't come home to you, what is he going to do? So you're going to have to deal with some of those situations, you know. When his testosterone is raised by somebody else, and know that you can raise it yourself if you want to.
This is what I know. If you truly understood what we shared with you tonight, truly understood it, and put it into practice every day. If you're single, you can have a spouse anytime you want them, and a good one. If you're married, you'll be able to have something together. And when that starts, then you got to answer that other question. What will keep us together 15 years from now? Because even doing all of these things won't keep Rena and I together. That's not the answer for why we stay together now. Even doing all of that. You have to have ultimately a ministry that is more important than all of that. And what's Rena's in my ministry? We knew when we started doing this that we were putting ourselves in a glass house when it came to marriage. we knew that there would be people that would look at us and go, well, how are Bill and Rita doing? They say it's such a great thing and they teach us this, but what are they really doing? Or is it just all smoke and mirrors? That's just the way it is. And our whole thing that'll keep us together, our ministry now, is working, sharing things like this. If I could do this every day of my life to a new group of people and somehow feed myself, I think this is what I'd do till I fell over dead, because it's what I know. And I absolutely love it.